Like I said, David Washington from Microsoft. I run our technical evangelism team for the Central United States. So what we do is we're hackers, coders, and we code essentially with developers out in the community, right? Like hackathons and user groups. You may have met like somebody from Microsoft at a meetup, whether it's in Minneapolis here or in Chicago. And we're all around the U.S. You know, we're not a huge team. It's not like there's hundreds of us. But, you know, we're in all the major cities around the U.S. And the point is to really learn and grow and know what's going on in the community and hopefully show how Microsoft technologies can kind of help make you successful, too, and be that resource, right? Or sounding board, like, oh, IE sucks. Yeah, sure, you can tell us. IE does suck. Cool. So today we're going to talk about custom touch stuff that doesn't suck. It's particularly on the web. That's what this session's about. Because it's really easy to make stuff suck with touch in general. Little bit of background on me. I've been at Microsoft for about 11 years. Most of the time I've been at Microsoft, I was out in Redmond on the Windows engineering team. I was responsible for the copy dialog in Windows 7 and Windows 8. If you like copying and the progress there, you're welcome. I also removed the start button, which is... No, that wasn't me. but I know the guy who did. He's doing all right. So I worked on File Explorer, file copy, and then in Windows 8 we were looking at the mobile experience, right? Like how do we build something, you know, that's great for a tablet, you know, great for productivity, and kind of bring some of the best of what we know about Windows for a tablet like the Surface. The iPhone was out, but the iPad wasn't released yet. There wasn't a lot of apps that were really built for that larger screen. So we found that we were inventing a lot of things as we went. And when you're kind of inventing things, those of you who kind of been in this process where you couldn't kind of learn that much from what was there, you build a lot of bad stuff as you go, like a lot of bad prototypes or a lot of things that just sucked. And through that process, we kind of were able to create a pattern of things that that work, right? There's been a lot that has come out since then, right? A lot of interesting stuff on the iPad, a lot of interesting stuff on Windows and Android, you know, on that tablet kind of touch experience on the web and on mobile. But the thing that I think is interesting about this talk is, you know, you kind of get to rewind into that headspace where you don't just assume that, like, somebody else has figured out for you. Like, oh, jQuery Mobile, like, it's already right? You know, it's when you're building something that's going to be great for touch, you know, you kind of own all that responsibility, right? You don't necessarily have to just trust the framework or just trust what you have available. Just evaluate what you're building on its own merits. And then if it sucks, then, you know, fix it. So that's the kind of point of this talk. In the Windows days, I also have shipped a bunch of apps. And I really got into, I don't know what this thing is. I think it's a microphone. It's kind of weird. I got into a bunch of kind of hybrid apps, and I didn't really like how, you know, hybrid apps kind of were like bad and kind of kludgy, but like native apps were like slick and fast and looked right. So that's where I really started to push the boundaries as to kind of what people expect you can do with HTML. So in this session, we'll kind of get into some of that. So let's get into it. One thing, you know, when you're designing for touch, one thing that's really easy to kind of overlook, really, is you're not really designing pixels, or you're not really designing UI or a layout for the sake of the UI, right? With a web UI, right? Like, you've got, most of the time, you have a mouse and a keyboard, and you can kind of predictively navigate things. As long as you put stuff in a logical kind of information layout, people are going to be able to use that thing, right? This is the way my organization is organized, or this is the way my site should work. I'll organize it that way. And, you know, people will be able to use it as long as it's logical with the mouse. You know, hopefully it's not too ugly, but yeah, you know, that you can make it work. The thing that's different about touch is you're not really designing for pixels, you're designing for anatomy, right? There's no translation layer between the screen and the computer and the person using it, right? There's no mouse, there's no trackpad, there's no keyboard that kind of like does that, you know, what's it called? Like fuzzy to digital conversion, right? Analog to digital conversion, I guess. The person is actually touching the screen, right? So it's almost like, I mean, you're designing, you know, your app is essentially a consumer product, and it kind of bears all the responsibility of consumer products, right? Like, the people using your app or your site, are they going to have, you know, chronic fatigue? Are people going to be able to use it comfortably, right? So it's just a completely different kind of headspace, right? As soon as you're kind of want it to work well with touch, you kind of have to think about, not just think about like, oh, is the button big enough? You really need to think about like all of the factors that go into someone using it from that touch world. And I'll give you a little example here. In Windows 8, we were kind of studying, what are some of the comfortable ways that people were using tablets, right? And we just said, hey, here's a tablet, sit down and use it, right? And the reality is, there was no like predominant way. There was no like right way to use a tablet. Like 90% of people, like it was funny, we used to talk about like, oh, everyone's gonna like Star Trek a tablet, like hold it with one hand and like do that. Or like some people were like, oh no, you're just gonna set it down. I mean, it sounds kind of stupid, but like at the time it's kind of like, well, how are people gonna use it? And the reality is there's no right way. You're gonna use it in the way that you are right now. Right, like if you're on the couch and you've got like some Cheetos on your lap, and you're gonna like make sure that you can still eat the Cheetos while you're using the tablet, right? So there's no right way, and you can see with each one of these ways that the person's holding it, you know, there's a different set of factors at play, right? Like, you know, you can think about it as like, oh, they're just pointing, you know, to different parts in the UI. But in reality, just think about, like going back to the anatomy, think about all the muscles that are in your body and how they react differently as you are in each of these kind of postures, right? So for example, if you're just scrolling, you know, you're kind of using your wrist and part of your hand, but like if for some reason there's something that's really far in the upper left-hand corner and you have to like lift your arm, all of a sudden you're using your shoulder and your like muscles down here and like muscles over here. And like those are just all nuances, right? It's not necessarily like, oh yeah, people won't notice. Like it's just using their arms. But you know, it's one of the small factors that kind of adds up over time when you're building something. So the difference between something that's like, oh, that just was easy and comfortable, and something that like, oh yeah, that just worked. It was good. So when you're designing something for touch, don't be afraid to ignore what people are doing on screen and just look at their body. Like, how are they, you know, are they comfortable? Are they switching hands or using another hand when we didn't expect them to use another hand? Look at the person using the thing, not just what your UI is. And that's difficult to instrument, you know, with Google Analytics, but it's still, you know, it's essential. One thing that, you know, a form of telemetry that we did here is we knew that there was kind of an advantage. I don't have another tablet here because it's plugged in, but imagine this keyboard is a tablet. But we knew there was an advantage, at least for a small and mid-sized tablet, to holding it with two hands, because you can hold it and stabilize at the same time, and your thumbs kind of can be pointers while you're doing that. Contrary to like what I was calling the Star Trek move, every time that you're touching this way, you have to retarget. And targeting with your big gross muscles, like your shoulder and your elbow, are actually like, those are not good at targeting. Like little finger, like fingers are good at targeting, right? But like shoulders are not good at targeting. They're good at throwing and punching and all those kind of things we evolved to be good at. Like grasping, like we evolved to do like really minute things, you know, with our fingers that way, right? So when you're holding it in this posture, your thumbs kind of are a natural way to both support and touch things without retargeting. Again, it's not like it's the best and only way to do it, but got stuck on there. But, you know, that was one thing that we were looking at. So we wanted to study, hey, like, how do we make sure, you know, how do we study how people's thumbs vary even from PC to PC and from person to person? So we got some finger paints out, right? And what we did is we put some blue paint on people's thumbs, and we said, okay, put your thumbs on the paper, and then just kind of rub around where it's comfortable for you to touch the screen, right? And then so here, this person rubbed around and, you know, did that. And then we said, okay, here's some red paint. Now rub around where, like, the maximum extremity for you to reach, right? So for this person, it's like, oh, great. Like, this is where their thumb was comfortable, so put your UI there, and then that's the maximum, so, you know, try to avoid putting stuff outside of that. But what's interesting is you go from person to person, there's kind of wild variation, right? Like, everyone's thumbs are different. Like, it's kind of weird when you think about it. Like, some people are good at really, like the up and down sweeping, but, like, some people, oh, like, I just can't extend, and it's just like, I don't know why. It's just, like, weird. Like, people are weird, right? And then, you know, this person is really interesting because they, like, they can kind of do the arc, but they can't complete it, you know, and I don't know why. But so we had I think we had like 250 or 300 people go through this finger painting exercise, and we did some math on it and was able to kind of calculate, you know, where most things, you know, will be comfortable for people. And that was a useful tool for us to build a better keyboard. You know, there's like our Halo game we were able to use to kind of make sure that it would be comfortable as you're kind of thumb sticking around the game. And again, you know, the point of this talk isn't to say, like, go design your thing for thumbs in these spots. The point is, like, when you're designing your thing, you can go through a similar exercise beyond kind of the basics, like, oh, does the touch work or does it scroll? You know, really kind of zoom out your perspective a little bit and think about, like, does it actually work for the ways that people are going to be using this, ignoring even what's on screen? So that was kind of the first point. You know, you're designing for anatomy. It's a different kind of way of thinking about it. And, you know, if you kind of just start in with that mind space, you'll already be in a much better place than trying to, like, make something that's working for mouse or working for keyboard and then, you know, just trying to, like, bolt on the touch part of it, right? One example here, you know, just to kind of look at that conversion here is, let's say I invented a terrible app, right? Just, you know, because I thought it would be good for purposes of example, because no one will argue that this is like a great app or a great website. People will just look at the interaction, which I think is more valuable. And the whole point of it is, like, it's a text editor app, and the only feature it has is uppercase and lowercase, right? It's like uppercase everything and lowercase everything. Sure. This is what it looked like as a desktop app, or maybe it had a similar kind of toolbar as a web app. And we kind of want to start to think about how to bring that to mobile, right? To a mobile website. One instinct might be to say, oh, okay, let's make those things bigger, right? Like, oh, we've got that uppercase and lowercase button menu. I use jQuery Mobile, I used Ionic, I just use the bigger menu version of the thing, and now it actually can be touchable, right? And then you're like, oh yeah, David had this session, he said, oh, like, the bottom of the screen is kind of comfortable if you're using the thumbs, maybe I'll move stuff to the bottom too, right? And sure, this will work, but the point here is you can do more, right? And that's what I want to spend most of this talk going into, is really what I like to call, and what this guy Dan Safer is going into, is micro-interactions. Does anyone know Dan Safer? Oh, super cool guy. He worked at IDEO. It's like this company that, like, designs cool stuff for BMW and stuff like that. He works at IDEO, and he's done a lot of thinking about just, like, interactivity in general. Not just touch, but just interactivity in general. And he goes into this world where you're thinking about a micro-interaction, which is, like, usually the thing that you don't even think about but ends up being the bulk of your experience, right? Like, think about pumping gas, right? That's, like, an example he uses in the book, right? Like, sometimes when you pump gas, it just kind of works the way you expect it, and sometimes it's horrible. And no one is going to tell you why it's horrible or what it is, but like, given how many times in our life we're pumping gas, that is like a really big deal. Like whether that you have to wait 5 seconds before you can hit cancel, or like you can hit the button at the right time. And the same thing applies to your experience, right? If every time you go to your website, you have to log on, then like maybe logging on is like the most important thing of your thing, right? Like that's like the first thing that you should study and get right. Or another example here is in mail, like mail apps, right? You know, there was a long time when people were, you know, just using mail apps that kind of worked the way desktop mail app were on the phone. And then, like, there was kind of like a renaissance over the last 5 years when it's like, you know, like, most of the time I'm, like, deleting email, right? Maybe I should just make deleting email really freaking awesome. And then you have apps like Acompli, which is now, like, bought by Microsoft, and, like, a bunch of other sweet mail apps that are, like, really great at deleting and flagging and replying, right? And the point there is they really studied that micro-interaction, and rather than just saying, okay, now it works, they like design the shit out of it, right? And that's kind of the point here is like, let's look at one micro-interaction. The whole point of my app is uppercase and lowercase. So let's like really just go in and design every detail of that. And then, you know, it doesn't really scale to do this for everything in your experience, but sometimes it's okay to go beyond, you know, what you're kind of trusting the frameworks and the system for. Like, it's okay to go beyond the standard controls that are offered in iOS or offered in the web framework that you're using, as long as you make sure they meet this kind of minimum bar of what makes a great touch experience. So let's look into this a little bit. I've got a little code demo here. We're going to kind of start with something that sucks and, you know, code it up. One thing that I thought I would just add here to kind of set the stage a little bit, because even though we're going to be coding here, I'm not going to go through every line of the project. So I thought it might be useful to kind of just start, you know, high level from the code perspective. One, if you're building something that can just be built with like panning, like everything that's just supported in like the default native scrolling features in the web, that's just going to be better, right? Like my team was on the same team that built all of the touch panning features in the web browser, you know, in Edge now. And the way that you build a modern web browser for touch is insane. Like, you'd be surprised how that actually worked. Like, basically, when you put your finger down, it's not like there's, like, a bunch of code that happens. Like, in Windows, we called it direct manipulation or... I forgot there's an exact name of the framework that we did, and basically we take that touch input and we push it off to another place that is its only purpose is to stay in sync with the GPU that's drawing the image, right? So like your JavaScript code or any code that you're writing, even Objective-C, if you're like moving stuff, it will never be as buttery fast as the code that's like always in lockstep, 60 frames per second. With the touch, like the touch hardware is totally abstracted with the GPU, and there's no other code that's in the way of that panning, right? So as soon as you, like, that's the way they build browsers. If you can build something that works with just panning and doesn't get in the way of panning, it's always going to be better, right? That's just like the reality, right? Sometimes you need to actually do like stuff that actually is, you know, in JavaScript, you know, kind of custom kind of stuff there, and that's okay too. If you're going to do stuff there, there's like pointer events, which are great. They're kind of like the evolution of what you'd call like a WebKit touch event. All the browsers it's in the standard. It's already approved by HTML5 standard. All the browsers are going to support it. It's awesome. The latest Chrome nightlies have it. And what's great about pointer is you get all the kind of manipulation events, pinch, you know, drag, you know, pointer down, pointer up, pointer cancel, all these things that like you need to build a kind of highly interactive touch experience, same sort of stuff that you'd get in a native experience. What's cool, though, is it's an abstracted event model, so it's the same for a pen and a mouse and touch. So, like, you get all the nuances. Like, if you get a mouse event, all you get is an XY, But if you get a touch event, you can actually know what the centroid, like if your digitizer is good, it'll tell you like what the centroid is, the geometry of the touch, like if it knows, like, you know, like the, it's really really robust. It can even, like, sometimes it can know like what hand it is based on like what's going on there. So there's a lot of like interesting touch data, but if you don't care about that, it works the same. You can make it work the same for touch, mouse, and pen, which is nice. So pointer event is good. If you're going to make something move on the screen, like a direct manipulation, you always are going to want to use CSS transforms, right? Because, like, if you're going to transform, like, if you want to move something to move on screen, you want that to all be offloaded to the GPU, right? Kind of like the direct manipulation stuff works. Because you don't want, like, if you're, like, for example, if you're moving stuff with CSS top, or, you know, you're just moving top and left or something like that, or if you're resizing something based on width and height, every time, like, you know, essentially hundreds of times, you know, per second or every few seconds, the DOM has to do a bunch of math, right? And that will just be sucky, right? Anytime that you touch the DOM, it's, or it has to do a relayout or do some calculation, it's just going to be bad, right? And maybe some of you has a magic way of making that work. But, like, if you use stuff that are, you know, what we call, like, independent, that you can use, like, independent animations or independent transitions, like CSS transforms, all you're doing is editing the text file, and the GPU will actually draw it. And you can get pretty close to 60 frames per second, or in many cases, 60 frames per second if you're not doing too much there. And if you just go to, like, just do some Googling around for CSS transforms, or essentially independent, non-CPU dependent CSS transforms, you'll be in good shape, right? And then another kind of coding tip, if you're building something and then you're going to make it like so you swipe and then like a trick's going to happen, and then you're going to play like a really fancy animation with a beautiful animation curve and you're designing like Bezier animations, you're probably doing it wrong. Because like almost always just doing a direct manipulation and having it respond in a way that you'd expect for touch is better than building an animation that approximates what the right touch thing is. So this is just kind of like ways to think about your code, and I've got a few examples here in the code that we'll look at. So let's actually go ahead and build something here. I've got a little website here called Lorem Ipsum. It's our little app, our little mobile website appy thing that its entire purpose is to, you know, write text and do uppercase and lowercase, right? And you're sitting, you know, I'm sure a lot of you have been in a meeting like this. You're sitting with your designer, and your designer says, okay, you know, we really want to make uppercase and lowercase great, so we've done a lot of thinking, and what we're going to do is we're going to make it so you swipe up on the button, and it goes uppercase, and you swipe down, and it goes lowercase. And you're kind of like, okay, that's, you know, maybe that's cool. Okay, you know, you, I trust you. I want to, you know, be bought by Microsoft or be, you know, be the next whatever, I don't know, like Accompli, or be the next whatever awesome, you know, touch app that has cool touch experiences. Let's do that. So you go ahead and you build it, and then I'm just going to swipe on this. Oh, just so you know, these dots on the screen, these are my fingers, right? So, you know, it's not like something happening in my app. This is just how Windows shows you where my fingers are. So so you've got this button here. You put your finger on it, and then you swipe up. It goes uppercase. You swipe down, and it goes lowercase, right? Or maybe it doesn't. Swipe down, it goes lowercase. Swipe up, uppercase. Swipe down, lowercase, right? Swipe up. Okay, it works. Awesome. We're done, right? Ship it. We're rich. So all I know about this is that this sucks, right? Maybe we're not going to make it amazing in the next, I don't know, how long do we have, 15, 20 minutes or 25 minutes? Maybe we're not going to make it amazing, but I hope that we can make it not suck, right? So let's kind of get into the code a little bit and go through some of these examples on how to make something that doesn't suck. The first thing that you can look at, you know, kind of it goes back to that kind of, you know, designing for anatomy and bigger thinking is, you know, ask yourself, after you build something, is that thing fast and fluid, right? That's kind of the term we use. Or is it buttery? Or is it slick? Or whatever. Like, give yourself just like a high-level question. Like, is it performant? Like, if it's jittering when you're doing the thing, then it sucks, right? Or it's not fast and fluid. If it interferes with scrolling and stuff the rest of the time you're using the app, then it's not good. like, just gut check your thing. And, you know, it sounds really kind of like not really useful guidance, but like, ask yourself, is it actually worth doing, right? Is it actually fast and fluid? Because if you're building something that's custom and cool and it's like not actually slick, it's not worth doing it. You might as well just go back to the basic button thing, right? If you can go all the way, then maybe it's way better, right? But if you're only going halfway, it's not worth it. That's kind of my catch-all. But you know, the first thing in the scorecard of like touch not sucking that I have here is really, is there feedback immediately when you're putting your finger down, right? That's kind of like an essential thing here, right? If I go back to my little website here and I put my finger down, sure, you can see the dot on my finger is, but nothing happens, right? Like, I don't know if this thing is a button. I don't know if it's a little label, if it's a bug. It's dead, right? In the world of mouse and keyboard, if you move your mouse, it clicks. Like, it always kind of clicks, right? And, like, at least you know you clicked it right. Maybe if something doesn't happen on screen, then, like, that's also sucky. But, like, you know, at least you know that you did it right. With this, like, you don't even know what's happening. You don't know anything, right? And a lot of that stems from the fact that you're touching glass, right? When you're touching physical objects, they respond in a way that you'd expect them to, right? If I were to pick up this, I know a lot about it. Like, you know, it's kind of bumpy and it's smooth on one side, and there's like, you know, you can kind of manipulate it and know what's going on. Everything on the screen is glass, right? So by its nature, it's dead. So you have to fake it, you know, essentially approximate the things that you get from real objects back to the user. And a big part of that is feedback, visual feedback. You know, you can do sounds and haptics too, but like in general, most of the time it's visual feedback. So let's go ahead and go into the code here. It's got a simple little HTML site here. Something I'm using this app called Visual Studio Code. It's kind of like Sublime. It runs on a Mac, Linux, PC, and it's like a simple text editor with all the like good like text features from Visual Studio if you've used it in your previous life and now you're on a Mac or something. I highly recommend it. It's also got a nice little Node debugger and GitHub integration. So when you're doing those like horrible Git merges, instead of like deleting the head thing, it actually just works, you know. That's what I'm using here. So let's go ahead and actually give it some down feedback here. And just so you know, like I said, I'm not going into all of the code here. I'm using those pointer events on pointer down. I just add a class to the button, right? And that class is just called on. Like, it's not really that magic here. But on pointer down on the button, I add a class called on. And then let's actually just go ahead and change the background color. So go ahead and save that. Go back to my site. Refresh it. On down, it's kind of subtle there, especially for you guys way up in the upper left-hand corner. But like, you see it's a little bit different, a little different color blue here. And it does a lot, right? It basically at least says it's alive. It's alive, right? In this case, it's intentionally subtle because the thing doesn't respond. It doesn't do anything when you put your finger down because the whole point is to swipe. Like, if it was an actual button, then you might want to like invert the color or say like, oh, when you lift your finger, something significant's going to happen. Here, it's just saying like, oh, I'm alive, right? And you can see a lot of systems will respond in that kind of direct feedback way. Like, when you touch it, it will respond. I'm manually adding a class. If the whole thing you're going to add here is just background, down feedback, you don't even need to manually add a class. You can just use like CSS active, you know, something really simple in CSS to just respond when you put your finger down. So that already goes a really long way to showing this thing is alive. So I'm going to unmaximize this. Is there feedback the entire time during the interaction, right? So this one's essential, right? Because if you're actually, the way that you are touching the screen, you kind of expect that it's telling you how to do it as you're doing it, right? Just for example, in my little presentation here, I can swipe to the next slide, right? And swipe to the previous slide. And, you know, I know how this thing works, so it works. But it's like the way I learned how to use this is I can kind of play with it and know, like, how is this working? Oh, I want to drag it all the way over and actually have it have feedback during the entire time. Even though, like, in terms of the actual input, all I'm telling it is right and left, right? So why did I have to do all of this extra stuff? Because that's essential, right? When you manipulate physical objects or you manipulate physical things, they respond as you're manipulating them, right? So let's bring that to our little button as well. So here, no feedback the entire time during the operation. I'm dragging, nothing happens. I'm dragging, nothing happens. I don't know how to accomplish this thing correctly. So let's go back. And just, you know, going back to the JavaScript here, I've got a little touch handler here. And basically, I was talking about CSS transforms. Every time that I get a touch move, which is that pointer event, I'm just doing a target.style transform, and I'm just doing a translate y. So every time my finger moves, translate y. I've got some other code here, so it actually hits a threshold and some other stuff I'm going to show you in a second. But like, that's the main code here, is that like, when your finger's on the thing, move it when it's on. And it's like, actually building this stuff is actually pretty easy in the web now. It's pretty cool. So let's go back to the site here. I need to refresh it. And then here, when I put my finger down, like, oh, now it's actually moving with me, right? I still don't quite exactly know what's going on, but at least it's kind of getting closer, like, you know, to that vision of you swipe up, it goes uppercase, and you swipe down, and it goes lowercase, right? And then over time, you know, you kind of start to become a little bit more confident as to what's going on here. And you can, you know, do it slowly, you can do it quickly, right? So we're done, right? Ship it. What do you guys think? What's anything else that we might be able to do to make this better?
Give an indication to the user that they could swipe it before they ever touch it?
Yeah, that's a really interesting thing about, you know, how do we educate people how to use this? That's for sure. I'll get into that a little bit.
Success feedback.
That's the next thing I think is essential here is how do I know I did this right? Like one thing that, you know, one piece of success feedback that it already has is it stops, right? So that's kind of a little bit, okay. But I still don't really know, like there's no difference between being at the top or the bottom. Like I don't really know if I'm doing this correctly. So let's go ahead and add that feedback once you've reached that threshold. So I think in my slide here, oh no, that's, we can skip that one. Is there feedback when you reach the threshold, or sense essentially, is there feedback if you've done it correctly, right? So let's go ahead and do that. Back to the CSS. I don't know if anyone can see this code. Sorry if it's kind of small, but in that JavaScript code, when I reach that absolute value threshold of 300 pixels, I just add another class called commit. So let's just go ahead in that class, we just change the background color to green, right? So save that. No, don't undo that. Ah! The button to switch monitors is very close to the button to undo. So here we go. I drag this up, and then once I get to that threshold, oh, there's a weird artifact on the screen. I don't see that on mine, but once I get to the threshold, it turns green. Once I get to the bottom threshold, it turns green. So at least it gets me closer to understanding if I did this correctly, right? A little better. At least I know like when to lift my finger. I'm sure you guys probably have a bunch of like brilliant ideas. We're going to become rich off this uppercase, lowercase app together. But like, there's a lot more you can do here for like feedback that you did it right. Like, we could morph this AA into like the right letter might be better. You know, there's also some other nuances I don't do here. Like, once it's already uppercase, you know, I still don't like, I don't show any different feedback. I probably should, you know, tweak that. I didn't do that in this app, but you know, there's, you kind of get to that sense of showing feedback when you did it correctly and that something's going to happen goes a long way, you know, to actually helping out a little bit here. Okay, so you had that idea of, you know, teaching you how to do it. That's a really big one. One thing that I wanted to call out, and I skipped it in my slide there, is it's essential to not really have any timing aspects of the interaction, right? And by that I mean, a lot of times it's easy to kind of come up with a plan that says, okay, you press and hold on the thing, and then it'll do a trick. Or if you swipe slowly, then it will get you a coffee. But if you swipe quickly, it will, you know, launch, you know, the nukes, right? And, you know, just in that example, you can see how that could be problematic. You know, and you're probably not going to design it that way. But there's, you know, like, there's essentially things that have that assumption built into it. And the reason why that's problematic is no one knows what the timer is that you use besides you, right? And something that seems fast to one person might seem kind of slow for someone else. So the timer that you pick, if you have like a timer for like how, you know, how fast you swipe or how long you hold, it's always going to be wrong. Because for the person who wants to go fast, it's always going to be too slow for the person who wants the fast thing, right? The person who wants who's just learning, it's always going to be too fast because they may want to hold there for 5 seconds, and that's just a ridiculous amount of time to wait. So in general, if you're going to have time, like, you want to avoid timers that get in the way or change the behavior as to what's happening. So here, you can imagine, oh, you tap it quickly and it toggles to the other one, or if you press and hold it, it'll change it to blue. And it's like, well, you know, that's just not good because you don't know what's happening there. So in general, we want to avoid timing. So another thing that's interesting here, and I'd say equally important for learning, you know, going to that learning point, is reversibility, right? With touch, a lot of, you know, what makes a good touch experience is being able to play with it, right? Like, how many of you guys have been to, like, you know, on Twitter or in your mail app or Snapchat, and then just kind of played with the pull to refresh thing, just because the little rocket guys. Yeah, Ian, I know you were. So because it's kind of fun, but also that's how you learn it, right? Like, you didn't know how to pull to refresh the first time, but you were just kind of scrolling and you got to the top and you're like, oh, what's that? And you're kind of like looking a little bit and you're like, oh, like something's happening. And then you're like get to the top and it says like, oh, it's going to refresh. But it didn't actually commit anything until I told it to, right? So you're in control that whole time. So in this interaction, we've already built in reversibility. I go all the way to the top, it turns green. Like, oh, that's how I get uppercase. But actually, if I don't want to, I can just like just peek down a little bit, right? The same thing can be, you know, same thing for pull to refresh. Pull down here, I want to refresh. Oh, I can release refresh. Oh, no, put that away. No, I don't want to do that, right? So, you know, and that's how you can kind of explore how to actually use these things, right? That's an essential part of, you know, being able to play and undo is essential to it. And not everyone gets that right. You know, even just in your own touch experiences, you may have experienced that. Like, I know on the iPhone, in the Mail app, it's kind of a rubber band. And once you get to the top of the threshold, it just, like, the rubber band snaps and it just starts refreshing, which is, like, fine, I guess, most of the time. But, like, what if you didn't want to refresh? Because there was, like, an email right at the top that you were going to do and you just happened to be playing with it, right? So really only committing on Lyft is an essential kind of part to making it reversible and predictable. And it doesn't make it slower, right? Like, some people say, like, oh, I want to commit right when you get to the top or right when you get to the bottom because that's faster. You just swipe and it's done, right? But it's, you know, it's just, all you have to do is lift your finger, right? It's just as fast. Swipe up, swipe up, swipe down, right? Swipe up. I've got some bugs in my thing here, but swipe up and swipe down. It's just as fast, right? So that's something to, you know, something to think about, reversibility. So let's talk a little bit more about feedback on commit. We talked about that a little bit. It actually changes to uppercase and lowercase. Let's actually talk a little bit about this concept of learnability, right? Like, what are some ideas that you guys have to actually make this thing, like, it's better, like, now I can use it, but you kind of still need someone to teach me how to do it. Yeah?
You can indicate the directions that you can't drag it.
Yeah, that's good. That's a great idea. Exactly. Okay, let's build that. Let's build that. It's actually hilarious. Okay, aside, not part of the talk. But, like, hilarious. The Windows XP people, they were building dogs and paperclips and stuff. they talked about this concept of personal assistants and agents that like help you be successful, and like it was horrible, but like just look, you know, I've got like Cortana and it's telling me what the weather is and Siri. Like some people still really believe that like that's how you're going to be using your PC for the bulk of the experience, and I don't know, maybe we'll get there. Those guys were brilliant. They have the patent for Siri. No. But yeah, probably not a paperclip. That being said, raise your hand. I'm not going to shame you too hard. Raise your hand if you've ever created like a UI that says scroll this way to see the magic trick, right? Has anyone done that? It's okay. Yeah, we've all done it. And like, you know, it's kind of like a little clippy thing. It's not necessarily like those things are horrible, right? Especially like the first time you're using the app, if there's like some essential thing you need to know in order to use it, like maybe show them, right? But then you can also ask yourself, like, is there a better way, you know, where I wouldn't need to do that? But I think first time is, you know, it's totally fine to onboard people into your experience, especially if, you know, they plan to spend a lot of time with it. If they're just going there because they're trying to see the weather, if you onboard them and say, oh, click here to see the cities, then you've already lost them, right? So let's talk a little bit about teaching. Yeah, somebody had an idea of showing some arrows. I kind of sketched something up to actually do it. I have a little hint in the background that shows how to accomplish this. So let's actually go ahead and show this little hint. Refresh. So when you put your finger down, I've got a little thing that pops up here, a little hint, right? And it's not perfect. Like, I didn't spend that much time designing what this thing is. But it kind of at least tells you something, right? Like, you put your finger down, so there's something that's up and below, right? I release, nothing happens, right? I was like, okay, so maybe I should keep playing. I swipe to the left and the right, nothing happens. I swipe up, oh, I'm going towards this uppercase thing. Oh, it turned green in the green circle. Okay, and I let go, boom. Okay, oh, okay. So it's teaching me as I'm doing it. Scroll down, you know, swipe down, you know, it goes lowercase. It, you know, it doesn't completely solve that problem of like, oh, do I even know to hit this button? And then each experience will vary, right? Like, only you will know if someone's going to hit your button or not, right? Like, this is a little weird. It's a floating button, like, on the side of the screen. I guess that's becoming more of a pattern, you know, especially on Android. But, like, you know, maybe there's something that is a little bit more obvious. Like, if it's something that you know people will hit, you've got a little bit of more levity to not teach them to do it. But the good news here is as soon as you touch it, something's happening. So you're like, oh, what is that little glitch? And you kind of like the more, you know, you kind of hold it and then you see like, oh, okay, something's happening. And then it teaches you how to do it, right? So that's good. Does anyone see a downside with what I've got going here?
Well, they might release and then try to touch the button above.
Yeah, that's a totally good point. And that might be like after we study this and look at our telemetry, we might like just decide that this is a failure and we might do something else. And that's fine. But that's a great point. Any other? Yeah. What'd you say? Yep. Great point. Any other ideas? What about like annoying? Does this little pop-up thing that I add, do you think it could kind of get old? Going back to the idea of micro interactions, you kind of want to design that essential thing the first time. Like, oh, we did. Like, we spent a lot of time. Well, you know, a couple of minutes, I guess, designing this thing so I could learn it well the first time. Like, oh, I'm just figuring out how to do this thing. Oh, yeah, sweet. Oh, I get it. Oh, awesome. So good. So I designed it well for the first time. But then what about the 90th time or like the 1,000th time that I do this, right? This thing might get old, right? So there's some approaches to kind of addressing that. And then I'm gonna just break my own rule. Let's add a timer. Yeah, let's add a timer, guys. Yeah, let's add a timer. Awesome. And then I'll explain why that's okay. 400 milliseconds. We'll just delay showing this thing for 400 milliseconds. Oh, don't do that. So does anyone have an idea? What are people's thoughts on that? Is that okay? Is that, you know...
So you give them a hint. If they're undecided, don't really know what to do, give them a hint after a little bit. But if they know what to do...
Yeah, and that's basically my thinking on it. Like, if it's going to change what's going to happen, like if you get a coffee or launch the nukes, then that, you know, the timer is going to be wrong, right? If it's still going to be wrong in this case, like it's never going to be just the sweet spot for every person, but at least it doesn't interfere with that, with what's actually happening, right? It's just education. So that's why you kind of get, I think, you get a little bit more flexibility in how you educate people, especially if you're going to optimize for both the first time and the 100th time, right? So let's look at this. I put my finger down, 400 milliseconds, it pops up, right? It doesn't really feel like that long, like especially if it's the first time I'm using this. And then I can still use it, it's great, awesome. Use it, it's great, awesome, right? No big deal. But the 100th time I do this, I'm a master of this, right? I never have to see the thing. Well, that time I was still going slowly. I never have to see the thing. It just swipes and it just works, right? There's no noise to it, right? So that kind of gets to that. As you're teaching people, yeah, it's great to educate people during the interaction, teach them how to do it as they're doing it, and then do that in a way that doesn't get in the way of every time you do it. It goes back to that micro-interaction. Is this useful a little bit? Cool. So that's our button. Any other ideas? Like, I don't have any more code, magic code to pull out to make it better. But, like, anyone have any other ideas of, like, oh, that still sucks, David. Or, like, oh, we should do something else. Yeah, go ahead. Oh, yeah, for sure. Like, I kind of like that sometimes, like, as you kind of get closer to something or as you're kind of manipulating it, it kind of becomes stronger as to what's happening. Yeah, that's cool. Yeah?
Show the state you're in since it doesn't make sense to go to the same one.
Yeah, absolutely. Great point. Yep. That's true. That is true. It is a challenge. Yeah, I think my target here is a little small. Like you can have it smaller on down, smaller when you're not touching it, and then it can make it expand a little bit, like you said, as you're touching it. You'd be surprised. Like people are kind of are a little bit conscious, especially the first time when they're using something, of what's going on underneath their finger, and then having this destination. Having this destination goes a long way to kind of tell you you're doing it correctly. This goes into a little bit more of the mechanics of how you're building it. But putting something on rails, like here, it's on rails up and down. Like even if I move my finger here, it's still on a rail. Putting it on rails is useful because people do put their finger down and peek. People do that. I see what you're saying. It's a good point. Maybe we shouldn't rely on that. Maybe when you put your finger down, we pop, we say something, we have a little thing. Or in this case, the polar refresh case, as you pull, it's totally away from the interaction, so we have a little bit more flexibility. Yeah, that's a great question. In general, touch is machine independent, right? Because you have the same fingers on a tablet or a big screen. Here I didn't do anything differently. Sometimes you do need to be conscious of that, like if you don't have space for stuff. But in general, you want to kind of be as device independent as you can when it comes to the manipulations. Yeah, physical dimensions, if you can. But I've seen people go overboard on this. Like, platforms do a pretty good job, like CSS and iOS. Like, they do a pretty good job of giving you device pixels. Like, for example, if you're on an Android, you could go crazy and try to find the right API to get the physical, like, so it's always 7 millimeters or something like that. Like, you're probably okay if you approximate it with a pixel value because the platform will do a really good job of making sure that that device-independent pixel is right for you. On the web, too. People do a pretty good job of that, especially the mobile web. A couple other examples here, just because I think it's relevant here. Does anyone know OMG Transit? You guys use that? Awesome. Those guys are awesome. I love OMG Transit. I don't know if they're still updating their site. I think they are, yeah. So I'm just going to like pull this up because I think it's a good example. Because this site, it's awesome. It's here in Minneapolis. You can use it to find when's the next bus going to arrive right here. Get on it. If there's no bus, you can call an Uber. You can get an hour car or a car to go. It's a really great mobile website. And they wrapped it in Cordova to make a mobile app. So it's awesome. And, something I think it's useful to study here, and, I've already given this feedback to them, so I'm not just calling them out. Like, they have a nice little hamburger button here that actually swipes in, some other stuff here. And whether you like hamburger buttons or not, this isn't a commentary on that. It's just, like, they have one. They've got another one over here with some favorites. They've got refresh, right? So they've kind of got some capabilities. What I did in this little my web example here is, well, how can we study some of those things and apply some of the principles that we had in the talk, right? So one, we've got a hamburger button here. You push it, it expands over to lorem ipsum. But in general, this thing is kind of telling me that there's something over there, right? What if I could just put it away, right? Like just scroll over and put it away. Right, that's probably better. Because this is giving me feedback the entire time during the interaction, not just kind of magically doing a trick. Like I don't know if I can swipe on this, but oh yeah, I tap on it, it goes over. I tap on it, it goes back. Oh, yeah, yeah. Wouldn't this get in the way of selecting? Yeah, totally fake app, so I can do whatever I want. Right.
But I get my point being, though, that you have to kind of take into account what you're trying to do.
Absolutely. In this case, if I wanted to allow panning and scrolling and stuff, like, usually it's actually pretty good. This is vertically scrolling, but I still have the ability to pan horizontally. Most browsers, I think Chrome and IE, support this thing that's kind of weird but cool called scroll chaining, which is like once you scroll to the end of something, it will start scrolling its parent, which is like kind of mind-blowing, but allows you to do some stuff like this. People don't always expect that. So like I think the right thing, like the universal way to do this is like besides just being able to support, you could just support panning and the header or something instead. And of course something like pull to refresh, On mobile, like on a mouse experience, you kind of need to have a button or some affordance to do that. But it is, becoming something that people expect and expect to be able to work. So a couple examples on how to take something that works, works well is great. But you can really design it for touch and go a lot further. One thing I threw up on my blog. There's like of all of the things we just walked through, you can kind of take a little scorecard for what you're building, right? Like, oh, do I have feedback on down? Yes. Do I have continuous feedback the entire time during the interaction? Yes. Do I have a timer? Oh, I do have a timer. Oh, maybe I should move that. Do I have a feedback when you hit the threshold? Is it reversible? Up feedback? Fast and fluid? And then there's a few examples here. Like Twitter does a good job with their pull to refresh. iOS 7, I was talking about how, there's it's not reversible. Once you hit to the threshold, it explodes. And then starting in iOS 7, they fixed their mail app. Like, does anyone remember the old mail delete where you like swipe it and then a delete button magically appears? Like, that's like the example of like sucks. And then now it actually is nice. It sticks to your finger and stuff like that. So that's what I had. I'm at Microsoft. Email me anytime. Find me on Twitter. Everything I've showed you here is on my blog. Both the principles and the code is on GitHub, so you can check it out and see what's going on there. Play around with pointers. Pointer events are cool. Pointer with CSS is you can do some pretty sweet stuff. go build some stuff that doesn't suck. Thanks.